Welcome back to the Native Waters Unaired Lands podcast, where we're talking with different members of our research team about their work. This is Kelsey Fitzgerald, and today we're here with Dr. Kyle Bosinski, who's an assistant research professor with the Desert Research Institute in Reno, but is based out of Montana and specializes in computational archaeology. Hey Kyle, thanks for talking with us.
Hi.
Could you start by telling us a little bit about what you do and what computational archaeology is?
Sure. My training is in archaeology and anthropology. And as in most disciplines, everybody has sort of a specialty. So I'm an archaeologist, but my specialty is using computers to understand more about the past and at a lot of different scales. So my focus has been on climate modeling, and especially paleoclimate modeling, and looking at how environmental change in the past impacted human societies. I focused on the Southwest and the Tibetan Plateau, but I'm branching out.
And what was your educational background like? How did you get into this field?
Oh, well, I started at the University of Notre Dame. I was a joint physics and anthropology major. And that's where I sort of got into computer programming, because you had to do that in physics labs. And I shifted into really focusing on archaeology because I found I could use my physical science training to answer social science questions. So that's how I got into the programming. The real serendipitous event, though, was when I got accepted into a graduate program in archaeology at Washington State University under Tim Kohler, who sort of paved the way in using computer simulation as a tool for understanding the past. And so there I really built up my computational chops and started doing paleoenvironmental modeling.
How did you come to be involved with the Native Waters Project?
As I said, my background is in paleoenvironmental modeling, and particularly paleoclimate modeling. Dave Rohde, one of our project participants here, had been familiar with some of my modeling work and invited me to come up and give a lecture in Reno for the Native Waters Unaired Lands crowd about some of the projects that I'm affiliated with. And that includes both archaeological projects, so doing paleoenvironmental reconstruction and looking at how humans responded to environmental change in the past, but also creating a tool that we call Synthesizing Knowledge of Past Environments, or SCOPE, that brings paleoenvironmental information to the masses. So not only to researchers, but also to policymakers, to land planners, and to the public in general, in a map-based, web-based interface. So for many reasons, folks on the Native Waters Unaired Lands Project were interested in the work that I was participating in. And we found out that our interests aligned even more than any of us imagined. So over the last year, Beverly and Maureen have gotten me more and more involved in the Native Waters Unaired Lands Project to bring some of my interests to bear on this project.
And what are you working on for the Native Waters Project?
So one of the potential goals of the Native Waters Unaired Lands Project is to create decision support tools for tribes in light of environmental change in the future. Part of that is understanding how environments have changed in the past. So my expertise, being in paleoenvironmental reconstructions, is to bring a context of environmental change to bear on our data and models about environmental change in the future. We'll be doing that within decision support tools. Think like a website that talks about climate change for a particular piece of tribal land. For the future, we'll also be bringing that paleoenvironmental information into that picture as well. And I'll participate in building those tools.
Kyle, could you talk a little bit more about what a decision support tool is and maybe give us an example?
You know, I'm sure there's a technical definition for it, but it's any sort of information that's distilled down for policymakers, for farmers, or non-specialists. So for example, you know, we create all of these climate models, or I create climate reconstructions of the past, but I can't just hand somebody the data sets that I create. They're complicated, they're esoteric, and they're really only of use to other researchers, and a very small number of them at that. So our goal in science should be to create tools that speak to particular audiences and say, you know, what utility is this for me? So a farmer doesn't need to know for the entire West a big gridded data set of what climate's going to look like. They need to know for their local area, for their farm, what the current state of science is, what the understanding is about how conditions on their land is going to change, and in units that are familiar to them. So how frequent are droughts likely to become with climate change over the next century, for example? That's something that can be useful for a farmer in terms of planning for the future. Giving them sort of raw data isn't quite as useful. So I view a decision support tool as any tool that takes raw scientific knowledge and distills it so that it may be understood by the public and by people trying to make decisions in their lives.
Kyle, what are some of the goals of your work?
So a big component of my research program and the way that it fits with the Native Waters on Arid Lands project is being able to leverage traditional knowledge in agriculture for sustainability in the future. I've been part of a project called the Pueblo Farming Project, which tries to do just that. We've been running experimental gardens in southwestern Colorado in collaboration with Hopi farmers from the Hopi tribe in northern Arizona to explore how well their corn, which has been developed, I mean, it's a genetically modified organism, but modified by over 1,000 years of traditional agriculture by Hopi farmers, looking at how well that corn grows in one of their ancestral homelands in southwestern Colorado, the Mesa Verde area around Cortez, Colorado, or the Four Corners, looking at how well that corn grows there and how the different varieties of corn that Hopi farmers have developed might be adapted to different environmental contexts. So we've been running experimental gardens for 8 years using traditional cultivation techniques, planting with a digging stick, pacing between rows of small mounds of corn. And we're looking to expand that project into more formal field trials to look at variability in Hopi agriculture. Part of this entire project with the Hopi is also understanding the prehistoric context of climate change on the Hopi mesas themselves, where many of these varieties of corn have been developed. It's useful that the Native Waters on Arid Lands project includes the Hopi tribe as one of their affiliated tribes. So what we're going to be doing is running paleoclimate simulations and paleoenvironmental simulations more broadly for the Hopi mesas, Hopi tribal land, as a way of contextualizing the development of those many, many varieties of corn.
So in your work, how do you use computer simulations to help understand the past?
Well, I do it in mainly two ways. First, the more direct way is trying to do reconstructions of past environmental conditions. And I've been so fortunate to mainly work in the U.S. Southwest, where we have an incredible dendrochronological record. So that's tree ring record of past climate change. So most of the work that I've done has used tree rings, variations in the widths of rings, like you might see if you were to cut a tree off in the forest, to understand how precipitation and, in certain circumstances, temperature varied throughout the past. We've been able to create reconstructions that go back with high confidence about 1,200 years, which is really exciting. So that's one way. I write computer programs that aggregate a lot of data, these tree ring data and modern climatology, as a way of sending those climate patterns back into the past. The other way is to use computer simulations of past societies, the decisions that people might have been trying to make in the past. We call this agent-based modeling. So we actually create a system like SimCity, except think Sim Pueblo, where individual farmers are trying to make a living on a synthesized landscape in the past. They're making decisions about what to farm, where to live, who to marry, who to fight in some circumstances, how to exchange resources with one another. And then we look at how that system built in a computer evolves over time, over many, many, many simulations, as a way of trying to assess the types of decisions that actual people made in the past. We compare the patterns that the computers create to the patterns that we see in the archaeological record as a way of inferring decision-making strategies in the past.
What have you learned so far from your work with ancient cultures that might help people deal with climate change in the present or the future?
So most of my work, as I've said before, has been with the Hopi tribe. And one thing that I've learned is that hard work pays off, right? The Hopi, they have a different relationship with corn than we Anglos tend to have with our food system. They put their trust in their corn and in their hard work in order to make that corn flourish. They also view corn not primarily as a subsistence resource, but as a critically essential ritual resource. So one of the things that we're learning is the impact that those ritual needs in the genetic selection, artificial selection for ritual needs, may have had on the diversity of Pueblo corn and Hopi corn in particular over the last millennium. So we're learning how these different decision-making systems, especially when it has to do with agriculture, really impact diversity and resilience of food resource today. Unfortunately, we're also learning that modern conditions, not only climate conditions, but also economic conditions like access to grocery stores, has radically altered that system such that you can go to certain farmers who are interested in seed saving up on Hopi and get all those 17 different varieties, and they're growing all 17 of them. Many Hopi people, though, have ceased farming, and those that continue to farm are only growing one or two different varieties and sort of reducing that resilient corn stock. So I think a big part of our efforts going forward will have to do with seed saving and the revitalization of traditional agricultural techniques that not only treat food as a subsistence resource, but treat food as a critical cultural resource.
Kyle, what are some of the target areas for your research in the coming year?
So one of the things that we're really interested in is improving the confidence that we have in our paleoclimate reconstructions. So far, the work that I've done has, as I said, focused on tree ring reconstructions. Tree ring reconstructions are great because in a lot of portions of the Southwest, at least, we've got good trees that are tracking high resolution annual or sometimes even seasonal paleo weather trends, which is really cool. Unfortunately, there's a trade-off. On one hand, you get that high frequency reconstruction, but on the other hand, you lose some lower frequency trends that happen. And this is really climate change, you know, that might happen over decades or even centuries. We're developing methods to integrate paleoclimate proxies. So these are sources of paleoenvironmental information that better track those low frequency trends. An example would be pollen that you might get from the sediments that accrue at the bottom of a lake. That pollen record can give you a much more sort of slow moving reconstruction of, say, temperature over a certain area and over a long period of time. The challenge is being able to come up with methods to integrate those low-frequency reconstructions with the high-frequency tree ring reconstructions. So a goal of my research over the next year is really focusing on good ways to integrate those two data sets and doing it in a way that's what we call reproducible, so that everything is fully scripted. The data sets that we're drawing from are public data sets, and that those reconstructions can be reproduced or reconstructed as data improve.
Kyle, how do you see your work integrating with other Native Waters Project activities?
Mike Denger, one of our Native Waters and Arid Lands Project members, has been focusing on downscaling future climate projections for each of the Native Waters and Arid Lands participating tribes over their tribal land and synthesizing that into decision support tools. One of my specific goals of my work is to give historic context to those projections so that we can go from 1,000 years ago all the way through a century from now and show people what things were like on their land, that sort of historic context within which adaptation occurs, what's going on in present day, so what are the conditions that people are experiencing now, and how that's likely to change over the next century. So it's expanding on the work that Mike has been doing to generate this decision support tool for agricultural people, farmers on tribal land.
Kyle, is there anything else you want people to know about your work?
Only really geeky things. So there is one geeky thing that I'm really excited about in this project, and Mike Dencher has already been doing it. He's creating these decision support tools that are looking at climate change in the future, downscaled climate projections. But he's doing that in a very rigorous way, such that it can be reproduced and updated with, say, the next International Panel on Climate Change reports. We're going to get new models. They're going to be better models. They're going to be more accurate models with less uncertainty. And we want to be able to integrate those easily into these decision support tools for tribes. We're going to be able to do that. And my goal is to make that as easy as possible, such that we're drawing from large databases in an automated way where we can click a button and create a pamphlet for people or even an interactive website so people are given distilled data rapidly for their local area. That's something that gets me jazzed.
That's great. Well, thank you so much, Kyle. It was really nice talking with you, and best of luck with your work.
Thank you so much.
Funding for Native Waters on Arid Lands is provided by the U.S. Department of Agriculture National Institute for Food and Agriculture. If you'd like to learn more about the Native Waters on Arid Lands project, please visit our website at nativewaters-aridlands.com, where you can find more episodes of this podcast and also supplemental information to go along with each episode. Thanks for listening.